Well, John, that was fun. Looking forward to doing it again. This is the John Krasinski Show. He's John Krasinski from The Athletic. I'm Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. And this is our Wolves podcast at TalkNorth.com. We're going to talk about the basketball in Game 1, the atmosphere in Game 1, what it might mean for the rest of the series. We'll break down all kinds of stuff, as you know, as we usually do. Best way to listen to this show or any show you like at TalkNorth.com. Subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the easiest way to listen. Want to thank our longtime producer, Brandon Morton. We're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services Studio. I want to thank our many important sponsors, including Defined Destinations, TSR Injury Law, Head Flyer Brewing, and Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops Clothing Line. At the end of the show, we'll ask a Twitter question on behalf of Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops, and John will let you know what you might win for sending in the Twitter question that we ask. So, John, hey. You've covered a lot of Wolves. You've covered them for a lot of years. You know, what did you think of the atmosphere in Game 1?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you hit on it. The atmosphere was incredible. Full house, tarps are off in the end zones, and the place was just jumping from the start. I was wondering what it was going to be like with the 2:30 p.m. tip. Also with certainly a lot of nervous energy that was surrounding this series, given how dominant the Suns had been against the Timberwolves in three regular season meetings. And it really was just incredible environment to experience a game. And so that was, you know, that was first and foremost really a lot of fun. Secondly, I really do think, Jim, that I don't think the Suns needed to win Game 1. I think the Timberwolves needed to win Game 1. And so just given kind of all of the context surrounding the series going in, they needed to go out and play well and kind of rediscover what had made them so great in the regular season, but what they had not been able to do against the Suns. And they went out there and they absolutely did it. They smashed the Suns defensively. They handled everything that the Suns could throw at them except for Kevin Durant, which was just fine because he had a really good game and no one else hurt them. They dominated the glass. They used their size and they got just an unbelievable Anthony Edwards performance. So like when you look at those boxes that they needed to check into Game 1 to kind of reset maybe the expectations going into this series, they nailed all of them, and it was as good of a start as you could expect as you could hope for if you're a Wolves fan for this series.
And you know, talking about the atmosphere around the arena, that's one thing. The other cool thing about this game, it was almost like performance art. You had Anthony Edwards teasing and trash talking his boyhood idol Kevin Durant, one of the great scorers in the history of the league. You had Bradley Beal trying to put his hand in Ant's face on a 27-foot three. Ant swishes it, teases him, and he just shakes his head and laughs. You know, that's, you know, win or lose, win the series or lose the series, that to me is the heart of NBA entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the interaction between Ant and KD, where you could see that, you know, Ant was so fired up to play well against his favorite player of all time. And so when he's hitting those shots, when he's feeling that adrenaline pumping through him, he is just overflowing with emotion and excitement. And KD is looking at him and smiling. And I do think that there was a part of him that maybe saw a little of himself in Ant. And just in terms of here is a rising star that is trying to stake his claim in this league, trying to make a name for himself, trying to make a name for his team. And that's very much what Kevin Durant did with the Thunder when he was 22, 23, 24 years old. And so to kind of get a glimpse of that and see a worthy opponent, I think that if it was someone that KD did not respect, did not fear, did not think was going to be a problem, there would have been maybe a more emphatic response from KD and maybe a return of fire or anything like that. But KD just shook his head and he knew that Edwards and the Wolves had it going in that respect. He also knows that this is a long series and you know, it's just getting started. So there's no panic either. But watching that happen in real time was just awesome. Like, and just to see the young, you know, rising star and the established all-time great, looking each other in the eye and going at it.
I really thought that the game changed when Naz Reid and Nickeil Alexander-Walker came in the first quarter. It was very even at that point. I think Phoenix was up by three or something like that. And yes, Ant took over in the third quarter, but I thought the game really changed in the Wolves' favor when those two guys came in.
Yeah, and that is really where, when you look at these two teams and where the advantages lie, Phoenix, I think it's fair to say, and I mean, it carried forward into game one from over the regular season. Starting five versus starting five is usually a bit of an advantage for Phoenix, just with the way that they play. You know, Booker, Beal, Durant, even Nurkic is effective. Grayson Allen, you know, did not play well in game one and got hurt, but had been really good in the regular season. But they outscored the Timberwolves by eight when the Timberwolves had their whole five starting lineup in the game. But where the Wolves' advantage comes is when you start to mix and match lineups. And when you can bring two incredible players like Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Naz Reid off the bench, you add Kyle Anderson in and he got banged up as well. The Suns just do not have anyone even remotely close to when they did in the bench. Eric Gordon has been terrible. You know, Bol Bol might be somebody that they have to add in just to give them a little more size because they got just destroyed on the boards. But he's not, a solution. Royce O'Neal is a fine player, but not capable of being explosive like Naz or Nickeil are. And then, you know, that's not even mentioning Monte Morris or, you know, some of the other kind of weapons, Jordan McLaughlin, even that they can bring in to do this. So that I think is where you're going to see the Timberwolves try to turn closer games into blowouts is when you go that way. And what I really liked about it, Jim, is as the game developed and Chris Finch saw how effective Naz and Nickeil were, I think Nickeil was a plus 28, Naz was a plus 22. He rode those guys a little bit longer than normal. He cut some of the other minutes back from Mike Conley, who was struggling, from Cat, who was in foul trouble, but was really good in the first half. So I thought that Finch did a really good job of adjusting and adapting to what was happening in the game. And he just has more options at his disposal than Frank Vogel does. Frank Vogel has to hope that the starting five of Phoenix just dominates the game to an incredible degree. Whereas Finch can throw all sorts of different things at them.
I had a few people tell me that the strategy based on Kevin Durant's ability is he's going to get his 27 points. He's going to score 27 in a victory. He's going to score 27 in a loss. He's going to get his shots. He's going to make his shots. And why worry about it? You know, why send three people to Kevin Durant if he's going to hit the shot anyway? So their strategy is make sure the other guys don't go crazy. And they did a great job on Booker. They did a great job on Grayson Allen. They limited Beal, and that was enough to win the game.
Yeah, no, I think it is a strategy, Jim, and I think it can be effective because, I mean, watching Durant in that game, and we've watched him for his entire career, I don't know that there is an antidote to him. Like, you could put Mike Conley on him, and he'd have the same amount of points and the same ease of getting his shot off as when you put Rudy Gobert on him. I mean, he hit some shots in that game with Rudy's hand in his face, with Karl-Anthony Towns' hand in his face, with Ant right there, that were just incredible. And so I think that it is very logical to look at this situation and say, you know what? There's only so much you can do with Kevin Durant. And why sort of devote all of your energy to a fruitless errand when actually if you are going to kind of go with the approach of, you know, we're going to let Durant punch and punch and punch and rope-a-dope him a little bit and score and score and score as long as Devin Booker doesn't go off, as long as Bradley Beal doesn't go off. I mean, that was the big problem in the regular season is Bradley Beal just torched them. And then Booker got going as well. And then there's too many options for the Suns. Grayson Allen as well. So watching the Wolves put Karl-Anthony Towns on Durant and understand that they're probably going to give up a bunch of points there, but be okay with it, because then you can use McDaniels, Edwards, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Rudy Gobert in different lineup constructions or different combinations on the supporting cast around Kevin Durant. And if you can keep Devin Booker to 5 for 16, if you can keep Bradley Beal to 15 points, there's no way that the Suns can score enough to win these games if that's the case. And so I love that strategy. I also think it is repeatable because the defensive players for the Wolves are good enough to make that happen on a regular basis. Is Booker going to go 5 for 16 every game? No, he's a terrific player. He will have games where he goes off, but they can't have situations where all three of those guys are in rhythm, knocking down shots, moving up and down the court, that ball swinging around. They have to really kind of make them work a lot harder for it. And they did a really good job of that in game one.
So what everybody always talks about is the adjustments that get made in the middle of these long NBA playoff series. What do you think of Frank Vogel's ability to make those kinds of adjustments?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good coach. You know, he won a championship with the Lakers in the bubble. He's won a lot of games in the past. He's a really good coach for the Pacers. And so he's a good strategist. He's a good tactician. And when you are strategizing and coming up with game plans and you have Durant, Beal, Booker at your disposal, that's a formidable combination. And so I would expect that the Suns can make some adjustments. But similar to what the Wolves did, I thought, you know, it, going into game one, I think one of their adjustments is we just got to play better. And you know, they have to get more from Beal and Booker. They have to go. But I don't know that there are a lot of real changes schematically or roster-wise that they can do just because of how thin their roster is. Maybe you do put Bol Bol in the game and see if he sparks it. Maybe, you know, maybe you do play smaller with Kevin Durant at the five. But if you do that, we've already seen what Rudy Gobert and Towns can do on the boards, and I would think you would see even more of that with Durant at the five. But I think that he will get creative. I think he will try to mix some things up. I think that his best option right now is to say, guys, you just got to play better, because there's not going to be a, you know, a magic bullet to fire that's, we didn't do this in game one schematically. If we do this in game two, that's going to change the outcome of this series.
Yes, we're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services Studios. We're going to thank our sponsors. Let's start with Define Destinations.
Yeah, looking to spice up your adventures? Well, you're in luck. Meet Define Destinations, your local tour company based right here in Minneapolis-St. Paul area, with over 25 years of experience crafting unforgettable group tours. At Define Destinations, they're all about making travel easy and oh so exciting. Their 2024 lineup is jam-packed with epic destinations and experiences that are hard to find on your own. From the sun-kissed shores of Croatia to the pasta paradise of Italy, they've got you covered. Plus, they include airfare, tasty meals, and must-see attractions. It's like a vacation jackpot. DefinedDestinations.com, where every journey is an adventure. That's DefinedDestinations.com, your ticket to an unforgettable experience.
As you all know, we had Tim Connolly out at Head Flyer Brewing last week. It was great. We had Steve Terry from TSR Injury Law there. Steve does shorter ads for TSR than I do, because he always says, just remember, 612-TSR-TIME. And if you're injured, call that number. They'll take good care of you. They won't charge you unless they win your case, and they win all so many cases they can hang out with Naz Reid. Now, we also want to thank Head Flyer Brewing for putting on that great show with Tim Connolly last week.
Yeah, so with the playoffs going on, Head Flyer is having watch parties for the Timberwolves every game. So you can go there. They have extra TVs that they're actually rolling into the tap room to make sure that everyone has a chance to get a good vantage point. They have a gigantic projector screen on one end of the tap room to see it. And they're going to have food trucks. They're going to have drink specials, beer specials while you're in there for Wolves games. Head Flyer Brewing in Northeast Minneapolis. A lot of you have been there for the show. It's a great place to watch a game. There's lots of seats. The tap room is wide open and clean. It's not claustrophobic. you can have a good time there. You can bring your dog, bring your family, hang out and watch some Wolves games. And also a reminder for the games coming up, games 3 and 4 in Phoenix. They're going to be West Coast games. They're going to be late starts. Head Flyer Brewing will be staying open late for those games. And so they're extending their hours. So Wolves fans go in. I think it's really become a very cool hangout for Wolves fans to go and watch games and hang out. There's plenty of parking right there. It's nice and easy and convenient. And plus, best of all, the beer is really, really good. As you guys all know, I love the Wicked Jump Shot. There's still some cans of Crunch Time at your local liquor stores, at your local Total Wines. So pick up some of that for the celebrations as well. But yeah, go into Head Flyer Brewing, watch a Wolves game, congregate with fans, bite your fingernails, cheer, and have a good time. Head Flyer Brewing, Northeast Minneapolis.
And last but not least, looked like the guys from Shepherd Goods and Lamb Shops Clothing Line were having a great time courtside, and they've been a great sponsor, and it's fun to see them getting excited about the Wolves.
Yeah, Craig and Jordan were having a great time courtside at the game, as they always do, whipping the crowd into a frenzy, maybe talking a little smack with some of the Suns players. But SGLambChops.com is the website. Go there for the Lamb Chops clothing. That is some of the most comfortable, some of the highest quality stuff that I've ever worn. I love their hoodies. Their shorts are my favorite shorts that I've ever worn. And they have great t-shirts, super stylish. They have collaborations with the Timberwolves. They bring up pop-up stores all over downtown Minneapolis for special events. And they are community guys who have been big supporters of this podcast, of Timberwolves, and so show your love to them by supporting them as well. SGLambChops.com. Use the promo code JohnK20, JONK20, for 20% off any of your orders there at Lamb Chops. And you know, it's high quality stuff. The prices are very reasonable, and it's going to last you a long time, and you're going to look really good wearing their stuff. And so, highly recommend Lamb Chops. Shepherd Goods clothing line, SGLambChops.com. And at the end of this show, we will answer a Twitter question, and the winner will get a free pair of shorts from Lamb Chops. So stick around for that and see if your question was selected and if you're the lucky winner today.
I really felt one of the keys of the game, you know, we all went in saying, okay, this team ought to be a rested team, staying home, having a week to prepare for this game one. And yet what Anthony Edwards said after the game was, no, worked like crazy, got into the best shape he's been in, which is why he had his legs in the third and the fourth quarter. I thought in that way, Finch really pushed the right button with this team.
Yeah, I think he did. And there's two people that pushed the right button, Jim. One was Chris Finch and one was Mike Conley. I reported it at The Athletic after the game on Saturday that on Tuesday of last week, before they had had any practices, Chris Finch gathered the group for a kind of scene-setting, tone-setting meeting before the Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday practices. And Finch thought it was really important after three really decisive defeats to the Suns to sort of reorganize and refocus the guys, send a little bit of a message about what they needed to do in this week of practice to get ready to play a team that had frankly embarrassed them for the throughout the regular season. And so Finch gave his speech, kind of talked about the importance of sacrifice, of hard working hard, of being selfless. And right before everyone was going to get up to leave, he said, "Hold on, guys, one more thing to say. And Mike Conley got up and addressed the room. And Mike is a very quiet leader. He is not the vocal rah-rah type of a player. But in that moment, at 36 years old, knowing that this is maybe the best team that he's ever played for, the most talented at least, he told me and he told, you know, people in the media that he kind of recognized this as a moment where it was time for him to speak up and sort of rally the troops. And his basic message to the team was, look, I don't have a whole lot of time left in this league. You know, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, N'Keal, Alexander Walker, you guys might have a lot of time left in this league. I don't. And so we cannot take anything for granted. He said that, I went to the Western Conference Finals with Memphis Grizzlies when I was 24 years old, and I have not been back since. And that tells you sort of the fleeting nature of this league, of this game, and how even when you think you might have all the makings of a sustained run of excellence, things can get in the way. Injuries, trades, money, contracts, all of those things. And so the time is right now for this group to go forward and to give their best effort and their best shot. And, you know, Mike said he looked at, you know, Kyle Anderson and N'Keal Alexander Walker, and he said, hey, one of these two guys may end up starting for me at some point in the playoffs, and I don't care. I'm here to win. This is not about minutes. This is not about shots. This is not about role. This is about doing whatever is possible for to help your team be prepared to win that game that night. And when it was all over, you know, N'Keal Alexander Walker said it was like a movie scene, like everyone was, you know, whipped up and ready to go. And I do think that that really did set a tone for those 3 days of practice. They went hard. They really paid attention to detail. They came up with a game plan that they were going to use, and they executed it very well in game one. And so I just think that everyone there recognized that they needed to really recenter themselves and really lock in, and they absolutely did that for game one.
I did talk to someone who was very worried about this matchup, who went to the practices last week and felt much better after seeing the way the Wolves were preparing.
Yeah. If that's what you did hear that. And I'll be honest, Jim, like I wondered, like, okay, you know, I've heard this before, like, we've had a great week of practice. We've had, you know, excellent. I've heard that before and had teams fall flat. But it's clear that with the way that they played, the intensity, really the ferocity and the effectiveness of the game plan, that was true. Like, whoever you were talking to absolutely was telling the truth. Chris Finch, right, who had mentioned it in the pregame kind of media availability, was, you know, that was true. That was not any kind of lip service. They really got after it. They really understood the gravity of the situation and how good Phoenix is. I think, you know, they have gotten into trouble in the past with taking opponents for granted or being sort of satisfied with a little bit of success. And that was not the case here. They had been smacked by Phoenix three times and they didn't like that feeling. And this is one theme that is sort of kind of been threaded through the entire season, is that it's a team that when they get punched, they don't stay down. They hadn't lost three in a row all season long. They've only lost two in a row, I think, three times. So it's a team that figures things out quickly and bounces back. And so I think they were determined to kind of remind everyone that they're actually the better team, that they won seven more games than Phoenix this season, that they deserve to be the favorites, not the underdogs. And the message was sent there in game one for sure.
We're talking here on Monday morning. We haven't gotten an update. We haven't been to practice yet. But what do you think about Kyle Anderson's injury?
Yeah, he has some sort of hip issue. I haven't heard any kind of clarity or anything on it. He was limping as he left the arena for game one. Now, the good thing about it is there's two games between game one and game two, so he's had a little extra time to rest and rehab. We hope to find out a little bit more about it later today at practice and what his prospects are for playing in game two. But sometimes, you know, those hip injuries can linger a little bit. They can be sensitive and touchy, and so it wouldn't surprise me if he's not ready to go there. But they'll do the right thing. They'll be cautious with him and do it. But if he's ready to go, he will go. But I don't have any kind of definitive update yet on what his status is.
Thought it was a very strange game for Mike Conley. We know how important he is to this team. He had a bad shooting night. That can happen to anybody. But he also committed some really weird fouls that a player of his experience and intelligence wouldn't commit. So, you know, what do you think of Conley's situation at the moment?
I think that there's a possibility that he looked at how those three games went, and given sort of the lack of maybe playoff resumes of some of the players on this team, that he maybe thought that, hey, I have to be more aggressive and I have to get the team going. And that's usually not the approach that he takes. And so maybe that got him a little bit out of whack because he was 2 for 12. And you're right, some of the fouls were just the kind of silly fouls that a player of his intelligence and his experience does not usually commit. This is a tough matchup for him, Jim. You know, the Suns have size in the backcourt with Beal, with Grayson Allen, with Devin Booker. That makes it kind of harder sometimes for him to operate. And so it is a challenge. But I think if you want to look at it going into game two, you know, the Suns can absolutely say, look, Devin Booker is not going to be that bad again in game two. Bradley Beal will start to knock down shots in game two. We will have some areas where we can improve and get right back into this thing. And they are right about that. I fully expect the Suns to be much, much better. But I think the Timberwolves on the flip side can look at it and say, that might have been Mike Conley's worst game of the season. He's not going to play like that again. Also, you know, Naz Reid was good, but he wasn't spectacular. And so he has room to improve. Karl Anthony Towns was great in the first half, really essential in terms of keeping the offense afloat while Anthony Edwards was sort of trying to figure things out. But in the second half, he didn't play a ton with, he had foul trouble and he was, you know, he was just solid. It was a solid game for him. It was not one of the Karl Anthony Towns, you know, blow up games for him. And so, there are other areas that the Wolves can look at and say, you know, we won by 25 points, but that was not a perfect game for that team. And so they have areas to improve as well going into game two. And I think Mike Conley just not being, frankly, a disaster in a lot of ways from a shooting standpoint, from a foul standpoint, I think that will go a long way toward helping them as well.
All right, now let's wrap up the show with our Twitter question for Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops clothing line.
Yeah, so this Twitter question, and again, thanks to sglambchops.com, JONK20 for 20% off at sglambchops.com. It comes from Patrick. How do you think Finch decides on closing lineups if future games come down to final possessions? Ride the hot hand as he did Sunday, or put the starters out to close? I do think, Patrick, that Finch understands that these are the playoffs and that they're going to have to do whatever it takes to just win the game. And I know that sounds, well, no kidding, John, but actually what you often see coaches struggle with in these moments is, how married do you stay to the most high profile players on your team, to the starting lineup of your team? And what do you do in those? It's hard to make the decision to sit down a starter making a lot of money for a bench player or something like that. But I think that Finch has set a tone where we're going to do what we have to do to win the game. I think it's especially important against Phoenix. If Denver is an opponent, teams that have high level shot makers who can generate offense on their own, you're going to have to get buckets down the stretch of games. You're not just going to be able to win it defensively in the close games. And so if that means Naz Reid has a hot hand, you ride him. If that means that Nickeil Alexander-Walker is knocking down shots and Jaden McDaniels is struggling, maybe that's an antidote. Maybe you go that way. If that means Karl Anthony Towns is rolling and in the post and beating KD up like he did in the first half on Sunday, then you go through Karl Anthony Towns more. If it's Anthony Edwards on a heater, you do that. I think it's just, there is a sense right now from this coaching staff that they have to be resourceful and they have to be adaptable to each game, because as much fun as game one was, as dominant as that performance was, it's still just one game. The series is far from over. It's actually just getting started. And so anytime they're in a position to get a win, you got to do whatever it takes. And I think Finch will have that approach. I think he will prefer to have his starters out there. I think that that's the group that he trusts the most, that he thinks can be the most effective. But if throughout the course of the game we've seen otherwise, I think that he will kind of ride with whatever is working the best in that moment.
Great stuff, John. Appreciate it. Thanks to Brandon. Thanks to all of our sponsors and all of our listeners. Thanks for making the show a success. We really do appreciate it. This should be a fun couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months. Keep checking in with us. We'll continue to do a show every week. Maybe we'll throw a bonus in if things get really crazy here. But hey, thanks to everyone who listens. Thanks to everyone who came out to see us at Head Flyer. We'll talk to you next week.